This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.
It's time for Round the Boards, updates from Dunedin City Community Boards on ORFM Dunedin's awesome morning show.
Paul Pope from Otago Peninsula Community Board joins us on the line for our regular catch-up. Kia ora, Paul. Nice to have you with us.
I don't know, Jeff. How are you today?
I'm very well. I don't know whether you were in town and managed to catch any vision from the aurora over the weekend, did you? You might have had some good views out there from the peninsula.
It was pretty good. Yeah, there was lots and lots of, it was kind of aurora overload on social media. Yeah. People were taking plenty of photos. To be honest, it was nice to have some still weather. I mean, we nearly just about got blown away. I think it was that Friday, Saturday, the winds were terrific, but and we had a few people out without power, but all service was restored normally, and as I say, plenty of time for people to take photos of auroras.
Yeah, interesting, isn't it? When the weather kicks up, a peninsula residents can really wear it too, and those of us sort of living further into the city perhaps not aware of some of the vulnerabilities that there are there for people out of the peninsula, Paul.
Oh, look, we had some horrendous winds, and like I say, we had a few trees down, and there were people who were without power for quite some time. It's funny because the company that obviously the Lions company is Aurora, and I have to say they did a pretty great job of getting people restored back to power within a relatively short space of time, given, as I say, the conditions and the wind.
Good to hear. All right, in terms of some of the issues that the community has been talking about recently, one of those is the rezoning decision from Queen's High School, Paul.
Yeah, look, that's caused quite a lot of anxiety in the community. The Ministry of Education have come out and said, look, you know, given the numbers at Queen's, you know, we're going to rezone for the catchment area of that school. And for some unknown region, the Otago Peninsula is completely removed from that zone, which is kind of ironic because actually it's brother school Kings. We are part of the Kings zone as well. The issue is, of course, is that we're also out of the zone for Otago Girls High School, which is the other, you know, closest single-sex young woman's school. And basically it leaves parents in a bit of a quandary. Where do we send, you know, our child to school? And the other issue, of course, is there's a very strong cultural connection between Queens and Otago and the marae. And there's quite a feeling amongst Kiwi pupils and parents that this is a really poor decision. The community have, I think it's till the 6th of June to comment on this proposal. And from what I gather, there's been quite a considerable groundswell within the community.
Yeah, when the news first came through, we had it was reported that, of course, there are a number of families that have got generations of connections to yep. Queens and had been setting up their children's education with the expectation that they wouldn't have an issue getting in. And so it's for those it's. I guess it caused quite a lot of disruption. And really, there's only, the one other alternative for high schools would be Bayfield High School?
Yeah, Bayfield. And then you've got further afield, I guess you've got St Hilda's or the other one, Columba. But again, those schools, for some reason, are sort of out of their reach. And like I say, there's been a traditional link between for young women to go to Queen's High School. Like I say, it's a ludicrous decision. It kind of puts us in a catch-22 position. We've got sort of no other options. And as I say, there's that very strong historical link for Otago and for people from the peninsula, young women, to go to Queen's High School. So we're hoping, as I say, that the ministry will see sense. But who knows, in the current environment, common sense at the moment seems to be in short supply.
All right, a couple of days yet to make decisions, make your submissions on that if you want to be heard
Absolutely.
On the issue. Paul, Paul, you wanted to touch base about the Peninsula Connection as well?
So long-term plan, which has been kind of a quite a drawn-out process, obviously, with the Dunedin City Council, but it's my understanding that the council have voted and that the next three sections, the last three sections of the Peninsula Connection project will be completed over the next 3 years. So that is the Harrington Point Otago section where the road is actually collapsing, Portobello School and the central area between Harwood and Harrington Point. Look, it's been a long time coming, and I know there's a lot of people who say, oh, you know, it's a cycleway. I think the first thing I've got to reiterate here is this is a safety project. It is also a project that, as I say, provides safety across all ranges of different types of transport, whether you're a car driver, a bus driver, a cyclist, or a walker. And the other thing too is that it takes our road, which has largely been something that was a construct of the 19th century, and brings it into the 21st century, and that's really what's required here. So it is an infrastructure project. On the other side of it, very mindful and kind of grateful. You know, we're facing, you know, a raise in rates, and very mindful, as I say, that, you know, we're part of that rates rise, and pleasantly surprised but happy that this has come through, but again mindful of the fact that you know, the community has to bear the cost of that as part of their rates, but at the end of the day also happy that our community and our visitors and people that come to our area will be safer on our roads over the next 3 years.
Yeah, there'll be plenty in the community and those who visit that part too that will be pleased to see that work go on and be completed, and we can kind of draw a line under that point.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Otago section around Harrington Point, that road is, you know, that was basically a cart track, which, you know, when you're looking at over 300,000 tourists a year coming to that area, and you've got some tourist operator recently, I think they had 12 buses at their business, you know, in a day. When you start looking at those kind of numbers, and you start looking at the state of the fact that you're basically on sort of a lane and a half, you just have to realise that this has to happen. And I am pleased from that perspective that we've got it over the line. There's still a bit of work to be done in terms of the design and other bits and pieces, but from my point of view, yeah, it is good news for the peninsula. It's good news for the city. But I think, again, I really have to reiterate that this is an infrastructure project. It's not a luxury project. It's a project about improving the safety, not only of our community, but the wider community as well.
Well, speaking of safety, anyone who's been a visitor to the Otago Peninsula over recent times has probably noticed, wherever they've been travelling, the little signs on the road that are being put there to guard or put people on guard for the potential for seals and sea lions to be on the roads. I suppose in this regard, Paul, it's great to see that the populations are such that we're getting all these visitations, but it's pretty much almost a permanent thing year round now to be mindful of wildlife when you're out and travelling on the peninsula.
Yeah, look, we're really kind of very lucky to have the sea lions coming back into the community. And we recently had a discussion, and I wrote to the Department of Conservation, because obviously as the population increases, you know, what is the plan? What is our plan here? What's the future of the sea lion population? What's the future for DOC in terms of its involvement in management? You know, what's the future around, the costs of managing roads and other bits and pieces to protect the animal? And one of the things I would say, and I can say this, I do feel that probably the department is underfunded by the government to actually manage this in appropriately for the longer term protection of the animal. And really, as I say, the board have kind of questioned, you know, what is the plan? You know, how are we going to deal with some of these issues in the future? And I think it's timely because, you know, we have had a couple of times where animals have actually been killed on the road. And so there needs to be, as I say, a concerted effort, I think, by the government and by to fund our regional office here so that we can deal with some of those issues, so that we can have, you know, appropriate viewing and safety for the animal itself. I think it's probably a chance too to just mention the fact that Jim Fife from the Department of Conservation has retired recently from Gulk, and I really wanted to take the chance to say I've known Jim for a very long time, and he's done an enormous amount of work in advocacy and protection of these animals, and he will be greatly missed. But I'm sure that he will pop up in another capacity with these animals, but. Like I say, it's really about understanding what the strategy around these management of these animals and making sure that, you know, DOC staff and the DCC have the resources to actually manage this in an appropriate way.
Does the board have any idea on what that would actually look like, a better resource DOC in that regard? What kind of management strategy, what kind of measures can be taken, do you think, to improve safety for...
I think there's a range of things. Like, for example, I know the DCC at the board's insistence put in some speed humps down towards Tomahawk Road around the Snails Beach area to slow traffic down when the mothers brought their pups there. And that was because a female sea lion was actually killed there. She was hit on the road. So the idea was to reduce the speed in those particular areas. I mean, the signage is great, is fantastic, and the DCC put out that. Unfortunately, we have people who decide that those signs make great souvenirs, and I suspect there's one or two that are in student flats and other places around the country. You know, we also, as I say, need to have, you know, possibly, you know, permanent roading infrastructure around places to slow traffic. We also probably need better work around having, you know, more work around summer ranges and those sorts of things. People who are actually out and about to advocate protecting from dogs and that sort of stuff. And also, too, is there physical infrastructure? You know, are there areas that require more fencing, that sort of stuff? All of those kind of things cost money. And as I say, from mine, given the fact that the department, you know, is often seriously underfunded, it seems to me that the government need to take some action and make sure that, as I say, the population here and our DOC staff, who work incredibly hard, have the right resources to actually and have the ability to make flexible change around these animals.
Mm. No doubt, Paul, we will continue to talk about these issues as they manifest and as decisions are made around them. Look forward to our further conversation around Otago Peninsula Community Board matters in a few weeks' time. Paul, thanks for taking some time to join us again today. Thanks for your advocacy on behalf of your community. We look forward to catching up with you again.
Okay, Jeff, have a great day. See ya.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.